Today's guest is my new friend, Tom Shea. Tom really blew my mind in this conversation. He contradicted pretty much what every single other strong man that I've interviewed had to say. And I had to listen. And quite frankly, he shook me to my core. I've been thinking about this conversation since we had it, and he's kind of never left my mind. He pretty much gave the answer I want to believe, but nobody said that the secret to making a strong boy into a strong man is having a strong mother. In fact, Tom, as a U.S. Navy SEAL for 23 years, wrote a book, his first book, that is now called Unthinkable, A Navy SEAL's Way of Life. He called it Spartan Woman. That was his original title, and he wrote it for his wife to give to his daughter. And when he told me that, and now that I've read it, it's been a very mind-blowing experience to have met Tom Shea, be able to have this interview, and to read his book. Please enjoy this conversation. He has forever changed my life in two talks, basically.
Women raising kids, boys should know, is that you're supposed to fail. You're supposed to fail as a mom because tomorrow is a new day. Don't take what happened yesterday into the next day. Start over. So create strength, model strength, be patient, and start over every day that ends in Y. If you do that, it doesn't matter. Most things then fall apart as of importance. Start over. Most people don't start over. Somebody shames them and then they're that person forever. Or they think that person is a bad person because they had a bad day, said something derogatory. So they never start over enough, which is a fun phenomenon in the SEAL teams. It's actually the opposite saying, the only easy day was yesterday. So today is going to be hard.
Yeah.
Don't carry extra weight today. Don't carry shame with you. Don't carry all your failures into the next day. It's going to be hard today. It's going to get harder. Embrace that. And that's the negative way of saying tomorrow is a new day. The positive way of saying it is tomorrow is a new opportunity. Mm-hmm. And when you're raising people or developing awesome kids, you better not carry yesterday's discretions into tomorrow's new problems or new opportunities. Mothers are the only ones that have the capacity to do that because men carry shit with them forever.
Welcome to the Strong Man Podcast with Dr. Rimka. One mom's quest to support her son through his rites of passage and becoming what I hope is a man of courage, resilience, and compassion in a world seemingly gone mad.
So what is strong man before we start?
Okay.
That was the coined term of this. Yeah.
Yeah. So how this came about a few years ago, I was at a conference in Utah, and they kind of were going through this thing about, I signed up, you paid some $5,000-$6,000 for write a book in 90 days. Okay. Mm. And as we're trying to figure that out, it was a conference for functional medicine doctors, and I was a little burnt out on the mental health thing. And I said, you know, I would like to find a way to get away from suicide and schizophrenia and multiple personality and even autism. Like it's hard. It's hard to carry that energy every day. And they're like, oh, what's your ideal client? Like, this is what they're working on in this conference. Like, let's find you maybe a new niche. And I was like, well, the easiest people to work with, hands down, are peak performing men. I go, my military guys, you know, my Rangers, my SEALs, people who are, you know, like come in for a little bit of tweaking. I go, these guys, they do everything I say. There's no arguing with me. And I can do in, you know, 6 weeks with this guy, what takes me 6 months to a year to do with women. Mm-hmm. Hate to say it, but there's a whole lot of questioning and thinking. They're like, doc, I don't care. That's it. Just tell me what to do. Right. So action oriented and just an easy group. So like, I was like, I want men, I want peak performing men. Like, that's easy. Give me more of these. So it led into, I'm going to write a men's health book. Mm-hmm. And started that whole process and started this whole thing. And as I was doing it, I realized part of why that was is because of my son. And so at the time he was 12, I think, or something. And me having this space of like, it was moving into, well, my market is men, like to get clients or whatever. But then it turned into, I really am, half the writing turned into, I'm just talking to my son. And the book became kind of, I became confused in the process. So I'm 17, 18 chapters into it with two voices going on, like the doctor and then the doctor.
Schizophrenic mother. Voices going.
Right. It became like, wait a minute, this is really, until my editor was like, this is like actually three books. We could turn this into a whole series. He's like, this is many books you've got going on actually. Cause this is really, really cool. And I forget what my title was a little bit different. I have like a lot of that written and it wasn't the strong man thing. But then as I paused it and some things happened with my son, with severe brain inflammation and mental health issues from mold, from a PANDAS. I don't know if you're familiar with this, but it was OCD and tics. It was overwhelming. My life was hijacked for a couple of years. I had to stop to take care of him. And kind of led to like, if I drop dead, I need him to know some things. Mm-hmm. Like, and so I want to write a manual for him. Like this is from your mother who loves you, but who also is a brain-based clinician to guarantee your setup for the most optimal life and to be the strongest, most stable, emotionally balanced man I can put in the world. Because when I realized I'm raising a man, actually, not a my sweet little baby boy is not going to be a sweet baby boy forever. He's going to be out there in the world and he's going to be having an impact on people. And I need him to represent, like, you know, that's my legacy, right? And oh my God, how do I do that? And I said, well, I know what I know. And so I'm going to come at it from the health aspect, from the brain equals behavior. How can I balance a good brain leads to good behavior, that kind of thing. And the writing, again, you know what life is like. You wrote a book and it can be more than one. It can be, I was overwhelmed with it. And I said, let me just stop. Instead of one day, let me start interviewing some men though, that I think they have the qualities I'm looking at. And I said, instead of what I like, tell me how you got it. Tell me what you would do. Tell me, you know, what you see, what my son should know today. What should women be telling their boys? There's so many single moms out here. You know, we need a lot of help. Here's your chance to tell us what you can't tell us in the grocery store, what you can't tell us somewhere. Like, what do these kids need today? What's different about today than when you were a boy? Is there anything you can share with me that I can share with my son? And basically turn it into conversations that a bunch of people can eavesdrop in. And I can end up using a lot of this information and content for the book. Or what if I just archive this? And it basically is kind of like a gift to my son here.
That was Stacy's request of me when in 2009, when I went to Afghanistan, was to, hey, you may not come back. So what are the lessons that you want to teach the kids, that you want me to teach the kids if you die? And I'm like, oh my God, don't ask me to write a book. Like, you come from executive function and, you know, cognition, and I came from knuckle dragging, and I'd failed out of West Point in English. I mean, oh, please don't ask me to write. SEALs don't write, you know? And so it was the same genesis of what is so important that you could pass on to somebody. And my first book, my original title, which is interesting because you talking strong man, my original title that I was working on, like you have to have a context to write. And it was called Spartan Woman, which is the most valuable thing a man can pass on to his kids, is that strong men don't exist without a very strong woman. Like, if you have a weak woman or a weak man, the other one's strong, the weakness will kill the strength. Strength normally doesn't exist in a vacuum where weakness thrives. So you have to have two strong people. And it ended up becoming 13 lessons, not directionally intended to be 13, but I just kind of wore myself out in writing. Okay, 13, that's it. I'm done. But the editors and the publishers are like, hey, nobody is interested in strong women as a title. And I didn't know anything about publishing. It either is true or is not, you know. And So they changed it to Unbreakable, the sexy term of a Navy SEAL's way of life. And maybe it struck a chord, but you know, the 80% or 72% of the readers are women. Mm. I thought it would be a military book. It was a deep dive into what I was going through as a man, as a father, and as a leader. And then each big mission, I would write something that I was wanting them to learn, that I was in the middle of learning. And I wish I could have made it into a manual. But it was 13 lessons and then 13 detailed descriptions of what I was going through in particular. And I think it reads well. There's a lot of foul language in it, which well, is relevant. Everybody cusses.
Yeah. I mean, it's you have to be yourself, right? Yep. It's your authentic voice, and it's going to resonate with who it's supposed to attract. So, yeah, so very similar. You know, I knew that about that book, and I said, wow, it's exactly kind of what this podcast is about, right? Mm. It's like I've narrowed it down to say basically it's one woman's attempt to gather information for her son, and to do the best I can to help give him the right tools. And for me, right, to work on that. It's interesting. And a couple men have said, you said it underneath there, but basically a couple of them was like, well, a lot of it is also, how are you working on yourself? Right. Like what, you know, like the children can only rise to the level like that I'm, you know, doing. And one guy, Jake, had said something, well, something to consider, which I think is important, because as a, when I was a boy watching my parents, watching, you know, my mom and dad, it was like, well, they made me very proud. Like I was very proud of them. And so I wanted to be like my father, and I wanted to do, and I'm, he's like, you know, so what not every parent thinks about, well, what are you doing to make your kids proud? You know, because often we expect them to perform for us or make us proud and, you know, do things to make us look good instead of the other way around. I thought it was a really interesting point. So wow, not a lot of parents actually think about that, you know.
Yeah. Parents, there's no manual for parenting. You would think after what, a billion years of, you know, humans on the planet, that there'd be a manual for something that we all do. Right. There's not even a manual for diet. There's a lot of ideas, but there's no manual of how the body processes energy. You would think there would be, but
crazy. Some of the stuff that we do, it's you would think. I mean, I'll tell you, I mean, it is natural to breastfeed, but it was a weird thing. You're kind of like, it took a second to figure it out. And they say you're going to figure, you know, but and women had to kind of teach me. And it's really interesting how even natural biological processes but did require other women to kind of come in and give me some finesse and nuance to it before I rolled into it. I'm like, why is this complicated? You would think, and maybe that's just because we've become so disconnected from nature, and I lost my natural instinctual knowing, and I needed women to teach me. Or maybe that's just part of the process of our tribal culture, that we do need each other to teach us things to move on to the next level, you know.
Jeez, I don't even know what is instinct. We could probably spend 8 hours trying to figure out what is instinctual, what's genetically passed on, that maybe everything is, but we don't have access to it anymore. We don't even think about what has been passed on. And culturally, we reject everybody that came before. Like nothing's new under the sun. There's nothing new. But we think we're so important that we're going to do it our way, and our way always hits bottom every time.
Yeah. Well, that's something, you know, so when you hear that, right? So what do you, when you hear strongman podcasts, or like I'm asking questions about how to help my son become strong, you know, as a man, and I'm saying, I think you're one. I think you have the qualities like I want my son to emulate, be like, search for, right? What comes up for you? Because it's a very interesting word. I find people have very interesting preconceptions at times. Some people are very triggered by it. They don't like it.
Yeah, well, you know, that maybe our society is trying to figure out its identity. And then a lot of identities are allowed to exist that aren't real. You know what I mean? You can identify yourself as a butterfly. Okay. We could probably stop that conversation. There possibly are rules of thumb that have been lost over time. One of the rules of thumb, not you can beat your wife with a stick smaller than your thumb, but not that rule of thumb. If you look back through the condition of how men become stronger, is 99% of the time, strong men are made by strong women. They're not made by other strong men. Because if you put a bunch of alphas together, one will rise and the other ones will be diminished by the one who has risen. If you put a bunch of equals in a room, there won't be equal at the end of it. If you put all men in a room, one will dominate at the demise of the others. If you put a man or a boy in a room with a woman, he'll gravitate to the woman who demands the most from him. And that's a truth.
Okay. That was really, you just made me, that was really good. That was like disruptive to some of my thinking, actually.
Because great women realize that, and the other one, and you know this, you mirror the people that are around you.
Yeah.
Which is the truth. So if you hang, what's that, in the social media, there's this one guy that's lives over in England in a castle. Show me the five people you hang out with most and I'll determine your future.
Yeah.
And that's an old truth. So you become to mirror the people who are around you. So be careful who you hang out with. And women recognize that quickly. They're like, wow, if I'm going to get anywhere, I got to hang out with the people who will get me there. And men don't necessarily look at it that way. Mm-hmm. They look at self-preservation more often than a woman will look at self-preservation. A woman will combine things quicker and men will destroy them quicker. So the other part about strength, even though I didn't complete that conversation, that's a lifelong conversation.
Yeah, no, that's great.
The other one is, it's a truth about how you acquire strength, especially through the SEAL teams. You realize you acquire strength through weakness, exposing yourself to weakness constantly. That's the mantra of the SEAL teams. Victory doesn't create strength. It doesn't. Like if you were to ask every athlete, like if you were to, you'd put 20 pro football players, 20 pro hockey players, and ask them this one simple question. When did you learn the most? What events, what games, what practices did you learn the most? And did you learn a lot from winning? They're like, fuck, I don't even remember the winning. I don't remember winning. I just remember, wow, the score, we were 28-10. But I don't remember what I did. It was like in the flow state. You don't learn anything from the state of flow.
Yeah.
You don't, because you can't recall it and you can't turn it back on again. So in the SEAL teams, it's the hardest life in the world simply because they don't let you win ever. They never let you win. If anything is going good, they'll virtually kill somebody. Okay, now Stephanie's dead. You have to carry her body around. Oh, man, that makes it a lot harder. Or, hey, Jen and Stephanie are pinned down over there. God dang it. Now we have to change everything to go support them. It was an off mission. So in the SEAL teams, it's all about what limits can we push, find our limit, retract a little bit, learn from it, and then what you were saying earlier about why it's easy to teach spec ops guys is because they have a condition called commit without knowing. You want me to commit? Okay. I'm 100% in and I don't know how it's going to get solved. So if you tell me to stand on my hands and drink water, I'll do that. And I'll keep doing it until I learn something from it. And that quality is not taught anywhere else. Everybody waits to be committed. then you ain't going to learn anything until you're committed. Like until there's no way out, you're not going to learn anything of value. And my impression is women understand that. They'll do it 1,000 times. They'll watch a kid do something stupid 1,000 times. The men will literally berate the shit out of their sons. Like I even catch myself doing that. Oh my God, clean your room. Stacy's, all right, let's go back up and clean your room. I don't want you to come, mommy. Mm-mm-mm. I'm going to come and do it with you. You're going to be embarrassed that I can do it quicker. And so they model things better than men. Men demand without oversight and then demand without oversight. It's the weirdest condition in the world.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I mean, that you say that, I would have struggle with his dad. I'm like, I go, you can't just tell him to do that. He's three. Yeah. You have to show him. I thought it was just the most obvious thing in the world. I'm like, you have to do it with him and teach him. What are you talking about? And then get mad that you're totally explaining.
I don't know why my 3-year old doesn't know how to do 20 pull ups. Why? I can do it. You know, so the men condition, you're right. They have to give up ego to be a successful man. And the only person that allows them to look at their ego as not cool is the mom or the woman. And other men have big egos. So you put 20 big egos into the room, the most dominant ego will win.
Yeah. So let's back it up though and talk about, you know, cause let me, you know, what I've always read and talked about with a lot of men and a lot of therapists, I work with a lot of therapists refer to me a lot and stuff. And some have just written entire theses on, you know, rites of passage, right? Mm-hmm. And how, you know, we all have different rites of passage. And what a girl goes through to become a woman is not the same as what a boy goes through to become a man. And a lot, you know, of what's happened in tribal and primal environments, we've lost in rites of
100%.
Passage. So it's interesting. So how I've always said it and what I was taught and how I've looked at it, even from my mother saying it and about my brothers have a very different life than there's 4 kids in my family, 2 girls, 2 boys. And we're very different. The outcomes in our life are very different. The impact of a father in prison was very different on us. And my mother had to explain, because I couldn't understand. Sometimes she's like, because this was easier for you because you had me. The boys lost, you know, she didn't understand psychology. She didn't understand how the psyche, what it identifies with, but she could fit. She just knew intuitively, right? So I've always like taught, learned or whatever, like I can't make a man. I can't really teach my son. I can't exactly take him through the rites of passage, but it's interesting, you know, like I need men for that. And it's like, they need to go off and do their thing. Just like women kind of need to go off and do their thing. Right. At times we have different ways of being. And I want to talk about that, but some of what you're saying is it's really like, you're bringing the woman and the mother back as being really important, which I really appreciate. You know what I mean? Like, I still have value because it's definitely, it's hard when you go from, I was everything, right, to an infant, right? Yeah, I was everything. Yep. And you know, men could drop dead. That baby needs me. You're not that important actually. Other than somebody needs to go get us food. I mean, I can get another one to replace you, but I'm basically irreplaceable. And to make life and to feed life off your body, it's a really interesting feeling. And then to be his source of every answer, every safety, everything. And then as the years have gone on, his father's become more important. Like he'll look to him now. He didn't look to him for anything before. And I have to back off in many ways and to let him as a teenager come into this differentiation, push back against, you know, and go away. And to let go as a mother from that space, it is hard. And it has a loneliness to it. It has a loss to it. Like, oh yeah, once upon a time. And now they don't want you to, don't touch me. Why are you looking at me? And I'm like, oh wow. I used to, at one point, you couldn't get out of my bed. You know, you could barely get 5 minutes without you climbing on my body. And so in this space, like, how does that work with, again, a boy becoming the man. I get like what you're saying, you get men and how putting a bunch of alphas in a room and how the women and are placed there, which is a very unique conversation. But when it comes to parenting, I kind of keep moving out of the sun. It keeps like moving around with me. What do you think of in terms of that? Like how we,
Wow, that's also moms, a 10-hour conversation. You
know, I know, but whatever, what gems you got for me on that?
I don't know if I would put it into solely a parenting conversation. It's the phase diagram of requirements to become a man. Maybe that's a way to rephrase it. Men, boys require a woman at all phases, but it doesn't need to be softness at every phase. That's where most women get caught in the trap of the kid needs you to do everything for 3 years. Then you need to phase away from everything from 3 to 10 and letting them do stuff that's less protected. The woman has to phase away from doing everything for the kid and letting them, like an amoeba, go test the environment. And usually the woman has to not make them wrong for testing. Like stop saying no, which is a hard, difficult skill set to have for every parent, because parents say no too often. Go try it. I could tell you exactly what's going to happen, but they're going to reject that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Don't go do that. They hear bad. They're immediately going to do something that you called bad. You know, don't do drugs. Cool. Now I got to go try drugs because mom doesn't want me to. And, you know, certain types of people are bad. I don't know if they're bad. I'm going to go test it. The woman has to be open to the conversation post-testing. Like, what was that like? Tell me what that was like. Women have a hard time phasing out of that, in my opinion. I don't think you should arduously test a man or a boy or a girl until they're through puberty. I don't think they have the ability to learn and process everything until they have matured post-pubescent. Literally, I don't even think kids should be in organized sports, because I think organized sports before they're through puberty are for the parents to do something with the kids, because they've run out of shit to do with the kids. So you go to soccer, you go to football, your bodies don't have the capacity to deal with it strength-wise. And you're not learning much. You may learn that you don't fit in. Don't learn it before puberty. Like the worst thing you can possibly teach a kid is that where they fit and don't fit in before they become a man. Because when I was 11, I wasn't capable. Now I'm 13 and I can lift a house. So there's a big transition that happens in puberty. And then you could put them into harm's way, which is organized sport. And don't expect anything from a kid until they're post-pubescent, because they're going to be different post-pubescent anyway. And that phase, like you were saying, I'd be more interested to hear what the medical community says about what capacity is in a human being post-puberty, because they don't have, nobody has capacity to do anything long-term or existential until they're through puberty. Mm-hmm. I want to fly to the moon. Okay, cool. Cool, Junior. You want to be an astronaut? Oh no, tomorrow I want to be a sailor. Okay, cool. Yeah. Be a sailor.
Yeah.
And then once they're through puberty, they can start processing and putting into their brain bucket, their physical outcome, what they could pursue. And then what happens, the mom is most important. All that is protection before puberty. Don't even try for success. If you fail, who gives a shit? Nobody cares anything before they're 13 anyway.
Yeah.
But parents are competitive and expect their expectations are way too high too early of junior.
Junior's
going to fail. You fail until you succeed. I don't know how many failures it takes to be a winner at anything. So if your expectations are high before puberty, you're screwed as an adult. Because all you do is your parents told you you're a failure forever. And that gets imprinted over time. Come to find out, it's a kind of a juxtaposition of most SEALs who make it through training usually come from a bad parenting. Not that I came from a bad parenting, but they come from failure where they've been cut down. They have a non-existent dad or a non-existent mom, and they gel in the teams because the teams replace your parents very quickly. And they super demanding at a level that it's so much scrutiny in the teams on everything you do, from what you eat to what you wear to how much you can do something, that they gel into the parent, that they've replaced their parents with the SEAL teams. And that's a big factor is, wow. So then it goes back to what is missed in parenting. What's missed in parenting post puberty is fail, pick yourself back up, fail, pick yourself back up, fail, pick yourself back up. And where do you find that in the social media? You don't. You hear women, you know, trying to do stuff, and then you shouldn't do that. You should have other people support it. And men are now the most, white men are the worst human beings on the planet in social media. So you've killed the masculine in society. Now, if you're trying to raise a son, the whole society is trying to kill him off. Mm-hmm. And it's an uphill battle.
That was part of the motivation when I realized. I went, it's
brutal.
I said, this is not okay. I never thought I would be a voice of kind of champion and defending the white male, I guess, right? Because that's my son is. And I went, wait a minute. I'm hearing a lot of stuff that this is irrational and wrong, and I won't have it. You know what I mean? Like let's
start. Whether it's a white male or black male or Hispanic male, males are really put down.
Yeah. No, I agree.
And then it gets,
I'm offended as a woman, honestly, by it, because I'm surrounded by a tremendous amount of some of my best friends and the people that make me feel safe in the world. I'm like, I need you. You make my life better. You make me safe. Like, I just don't, the more strong, stable, balanced, you know, what I consider a strong man, that's nothing but benefiting me and my son. And that's what I had to kind of explain to him. I'm like, you know, one day, you know, I protect you. I'm in charge right now. And this is how this is, but that's the tables are going to change one day. You know, you're going to physically be bigger than me. You are going to, you know, I'm outside of just that I'm going to age, and, you know, the way I take care of my mother, she took care of me once. Now I do take care of her. And, but you have the added, you're going to be a man. And that comes with a physical presence, a cultural presence.
I really think the primary key lesson for men is strength, physical strength. Mm-hmm. Emotional strength is recovery over time. That's what resilience is. Your ability to make a mistake and recover. That's mental strength, how I look at it. But be physically capable and strong, and it's not negotiable for men. Doesn't matter if you're in band. If you're a man, you have to work on, it's actually a female quality too. The strong, physically strong a woman is, the better capable she is everywhere. Mm-hmm. And back in the tribal environment, people were physically, demonstrably strong.
Yeah.
The woman had to be strong. And mm-hmm. until something changes in the next millennia, men are currently physically more capable of utter strength than women are. And people make that wrong. Oh my gosh, who even if you put 10 men in a room, one man's going to be the strongest. You know, so the comparative analysis of, you know, the man-woman paradigm, who cares? But yeah, work on your strength, work on your health every single day, because it matters to everybody. And great women demand health from men. Get off your Xbox, get off your ass, go outside, beat yourself up, do something. Mm-hmm. And the more demanding a woman is that the kid is physical, the better life that they'll have. Because everybody's inherently lazy. Mm-hmm. And now I can play Xbox and fight virtually. Oh, I'm a great fighter. Yeah. With my thumbs. Yeah.
Right. You feel real strong in a fake. You get the chemical feeling without actually.
Oh, it's the same. My eyes always interpret things as true. Yeah. So I'm fighting people. Okay. Yeah. Carry a gun like that. It's very difficult.
Yeah.
My son got into that too. And we went hunting for the first time and he's like, oh my gosh, these guns are heavy. It's quite different than it is on Xbox. He goes, man, there's no way you could carry a gun like that and shoot it like on Xbox. I'm like, I've been telling you that for years.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. That's how I felt when I was dealing with guns and going to the range. I'm like, these are crazy heavy.
They're heavy.
Like, and thinking, you know, I'm not military, what you guys are wearing. I'm like, that amount of gear, I like just what it takes to deal with that. And, you know, kind of reminds you like what knights and armor, like
how terrible,
what hard was that? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, well, in Afghanistan, most people don't know this. It's a weird fact. You have to weigh yourself all the time because when you get onto a helicopter, it has to know the weight of everybody coming on because it's a flight issue and how much fuel and can it take off? And so normally I was about 215 at the time. And I would weigh myself on a scale before we would depart. And I was around 320 to 330 on a scale. So no matter how tough you are at 200 pounds, put another 100 pounds on you. It's a whole different level of stupid. And which I always go back to, strength always matters. There's not a point in time where strength doesn't matter. Like physical strength, not domination, which is a different thing. But I've never seen any point in time where physically weak people made any significant difference. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But teaching kids to have a physical outcome that they're trying to pursue is a big deal.
Well, I do. So let me talk about that. I totally agree. But so as I'm listening, I'm thinking somebody might be like, okay, but he just said, keep kids out of organized sports, but we want to keep them physical. So like for a mom who's like, wait, what are you talking about? What am I supposed to do with my 5-year-old? What am I supposed to do with my 7-year-old? What am I supposed to do with my 11-year-old? You know, do they play? Like parents ask me all the time about sports. I don't want boys playing high school football. The concussion rate, there's certain things I'm like, nope, I'm not into that. Right. And you ask my opinion, I deal with the brain. Mm-hmm. I mean, the number one cause of concussions in this country is high school football for boys. Number two is girl soccer. I said, so their concussion rate is off the charts. Their coaches don't know what they're doing. They have a high chance of having a brain injury. That's just a fact. So you can make your call on that as you wish. Right. But then what's your advice in terms of like, are you like just getting kids outside, chopping wood, being physical? Or are you a fan of like martial arts for them? Like, cause again, you got a lot of parents who they're not physical. They're weak and fat.
Therein lies the answer to the question. Kids mimic the parents.
That's right.
So if you're demanding something from your kids and you are not, it's a paradox for a child. So one of the greatest things is be physical yourself. And then your kids will kick and scream, oh, I don't want to go on a hike, Dad. I don't care. We're going to go on a walk, or we're going to go to the gym, or we're going to go out and play. They don't demand a 12-hour play time. They demand about a 90-minute play time, and then they're toast anyway. Or then their brain has already went on to something else. So
yeah.
The organized approach, literally what I said, is for the parents. since the parents don't want to put anything on the table, they then go to an organized event where, like, take your kids. I don't know. I'm not degrading soccer, but it's the only thing I think of. Take your kids to soccer. The assumption from the parent is that the kids want to be there. So the kid doesn't want to be anywhere. Doesn't even want to be with you. So get over that. The other one is that the coach knows what the hell they're doing in a disorganized field where I don't have committed kids on the field. Some of them are chasing a butterfly over there. Some don't know how to kick. Some are grabbing their other buddy's butt and all that stuff that goes on there. It's just to organize a 90-minute period of time for the adults where the adults can abdicate the throne of being responsible to physicality in their own life. And the adults sitting there,
yeah,
doing nothing. Or so sometimes.
Really interesting, Tom. I got to tell you. So, because I did some of this stuff, very non-competitive, but I was my son's soccer coach. I was his basketball coach. I was his football coach. So I'm like, physicality is very natural for me. So I was very engaged in doing all that. But I did do these things. My son's an only child. Mm-hmm. And unlike how I grew up, it's very hard to find children to play with. I'm going to tell you.
100%.
The kids, they're not letting them play in the neighborhoods. They're not all over the place. You can't just say go outside the way we used to do in the 70s and the 80s. There was a pack of kids. I'm one of four children in my family. So there was always a pack. It was very easy. And so I would explain this to him, like trying to find friends. And when I had to start encouraging, honey, you can just walk down the street and go there yourself. And then he's like, really? I'm like, yeah. And then when he started doing it, he's like, Mom, you're right. It feels so great to just, when he could just go on bike rides, but to find children, parents that would let like 10, 11, 12 year old just bike ride with my son and you just let them go. I'm like, yes. Yep, like yep. I can't, what well,
the,
yes,
the,
you guys.
The distinct,
so
the distinct,
I did it for that. Right. Like I did, like he did, they play and it's very non-competitive. So like at the YMCA, that's where you did most stuff like that, you know, just. So to me, and I played a lot of sports, Tom, I started very young and it was really important for me in my life. I feel like I learned a lot about discipline and commitment and it gave me a lot of stability in a very, when there was a lot of chaos at home at times. So I loved it, but.
Well, so the distinct difference literally is who the parent is in that equation. If the parent is abdicating the throne of being responsible to her or his own physicality and then having somebody else take over that, but I'm still not responsible to my own physicality, then it's the wrong environment. It's different. Hey, Junior, we're going to go play because I play. So that mirroring that happens from the kid is very different. I'm going because it's what we do. Like one of my close friends, a guy named Kyle Dake, who's a 3-time world champion wrestler. He grew up in a wrestling environment where his dad was I think it's Dartmouth, some university's, you know, head wrestling coach. Mm-hmm. When he was 4 years old, he was on the wrestling mat.
Yeah.
Everybody went to wrestling. So that's a different environment than, I'm a 300-pound fat dad and hey, Junior, we're going to go wrestle and I'm going to sit here and eat bonbons. Kids existing in a paradox of I'm doing this, but dad or mom isn't. So that's a terrible condition to put a kid in. And it's uniquely different than an organized event that is being mirrored by the parents. Like even have the mom walking around the soccer field is hugely, vastly different than the mom that sits on the soccer field and does nothing. Because the kid is like, this is a waste of time for mom. Therefore, I'm a waste of time. And it transcends very quickly into that ontological thing that happens inside a kid's brain. And as quick as I can get out of this, I'm out. Because mom is not supporting it. She's here, but she's not being that person. It's different than going to a football game as a parent and watching it because you want to watch, as opposed to I don't know what to do with my kids. I'm going to take them somewhere and then I'm going to go home and eat bonbons and complain about having a heart attack. The kid doesn't understand that. The kid understands the environment that the the mothers and fathers are actually living in. And your mom wanted structure. So she gave you structure. It's a big different than I'm disorganized as shit. And hopefully somebody else will teach organization to my kids. She was demanding organization and reinforcing it. And that is how you captured
it. I was just driven to it. I mean, I think part of it was I was driving that boat. And I'm like, I loved it. And it was just a thing that was, I mean, sports were just a huge part of my life. I'm the only one in my family that played sports. My brother, you know, like it was just my thing. So, I mean, I think it was very driven and she just did her best to support. I just did it through the schools. It wasn't anything, you know, today it's madness. There was people are like getting their kids like at 7 on pro tracks to play baseball or something. It was not like that. And I didn't do anything like that with my son. It was all fun, learn some new, it wasn't like that, but now I'm hearing the distinction and I get it because we were very, very physical, hiking and doing things and all the things. It's just a very, assumptive way of my being. And I am seeing this massive, I didn't know, like such a dichotomy, right? That is from a brain perspective, something you said, I don't know what medical people are going to say, but I consider anybody under 25, a pediatric patient in their practice. I explained to them at 18,
it's probably 19. 30.
Well, from brain development, 25 is where we lock in the prefrontal cortex. I'm like, I have full brain development at this point. Up until then, you don't think real great, actually. And the way our society.
I wish I'd have met you when I was trying to go to college. I could not. I didn't have not linear processing, but executive function.
No, you aren't supposed to.
Like boys couldn't study.
Slower. Yeah. Boys are much slower than girls. So an 18-year-old girl, an 18-year-old boy, these are like two different planets going on. I mean, honestly, I look at my son and I have to be like, oh, right. I cannot compare myself at that age at all. Our brains develop a lot faster. You look at it at an 18-year-old freshman in college, girl, young woman, and the young boy, men, whatever, the 18, right? You look at their freshman photo and you look at their senior photo, that woman looks pretty much the same. Mm-hmm. That young man is strikingly different in 4 years. I mean, his physicality is so different. I was almost exactly the same in the eighth grade. Like I grew my feet, nothing, there wasn't by ninth, 10th grade, I didn't grow anymore. I was my height. I was my this, a little bit of puberty. I looked the same. An 18-year-old guy, you look at him at 24, 25, it's shocking. The size of the height, the muscle mass, the bone structure, you look like a man suddenly, you know? And so but the prefrontal cortex where impulse control is, executive function, long-term thinking, that isn't done until 25, 26. Yeah. And men definitely take longer for that to develop. So they do things where you're like, when you want to say, what were you thinking?
Yeah, what
like,
the hell?
They don't. Literally, my son will do something like, Mom, I don't even know why I said that. Like, I don't even know why I did that. I'm like, I know why, because you don't have an executive on board. Okay. Yep. Like, I have to remember that. And it's stuff I never would have done at his age because we're different. Girls, ours comes online much faster. We develop faster. And that's why it's why we do excel to a point. Then it takes a while for you guys to catch up.
Hands down, if you can only use one peptide, you're going to take BPC 157 Pure. This is Integrative Peptide's best-selling product. It has 500 micrograms of the systemically active multifunctional peptide. It is absolutely my go-to for every type of multipurpose therapy. It deals with, basically think of BPC 157 as healing and regeneration. Gut health, muscles, inflammation, pain, and believe it or not, brain performance such as anxiety. BPC 157 is a peptide I will not be without. Get yours at a discount and free shipping by emailing us at desk@drrimka.com. desk@drrimka.com.
Going back to what you'd asked, the primary thing for a mom to support and engage is physical health of the boy. The second thing is patience, because the man is not going to give the kid patience. Patience. How long does it take an oak tree to grow? Don't look at the roots every year to see if it's growing. Don't even analyze it for 50 years, because it's not going to be a mature tree for so long. Women have that capacity, and few women engage patience as a skill. It's different than
demanding. More about that, actually.
It's different than demanding, like, hey, you know, junior, go clean your room. That's a demand. Patience is not expecting it to be perfect until it's perfect. Do it again, do it again, do it again, do it again. Men are like what we were talking about, your husband, and most men are the same, is junior, why is your room not clean? I told you to do it. And then going off at an ego and emotional rant, that the kid's like, oh my God, I just left my underwear on the floor. What the hell is all this? Men don't acquire patience until 35 that I've seen. They don't get patience as a skill set. And it has to be taught, reinforced, taught and reinforced, taught and reinforced, because men want things yesterday morning. Like, I want that girl now.
Yeah.
Men want feedback now.
Yeah.
And in this environment, they get feedback everywhere.
Yeah.
And then around 35, you're like, man, if we'd have just waited, we'd have got a better woman. Oh my God, why did we just wait? Why do we attack everything? And the SEAL teams, patience is taught. No, 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 don't do that. No, that's how it's taught.
Yeah.
Well, I see one guy to shoot. Be patient. Let the thing unfold, but we're going to die. Let it unfold. Let it unfold. Ready, go. Uh-huh. And all the older guys have an infinite number of level of patience. The young guys are, hey, somebody's running away from the target. Let me chase him. Dude, be patient. Don't leave the body of people here. Yeah. Be patient. Let it unfold. And it's always counterintuitive. But the only people teaching that to men or to boys or women. That's a great, I think it's the second most important thing a woman can give to a kid, is like infinite patience.
You know,
and it's a rare skill.
Yeah, it is. And well, you say that, and I reflect, like, I'm looking at the lack of my patience that I've done as he's been a teenager, and I'm going to work on that, Tom, because I had infinite patience when he was little. There was nothing. I mean, honestly, I don't know what happens in the hormones. I tell people, like, I was like Wonder Woman. I go, those pregnancy and breastfeeding hormones, I don't know how people who adopt, I feel they're at a great disadvantage. I think adoption's wonderful. I'm not saying that negatively, but I said, you're missing out on something, because what my body was able to produce really chemically, when I breastfed, I was very relaxed. I was very calm. We were giving each other the neurochemistry and the hormonal chemistry to feel connected, to feel calm. I was the most patient and calm I've ever. It was like superpowers were given to me. There was nothing he could do. There was nothing annoying about any crying, about anything. Like, what? I always knew he needed something, and there was no reason to ever be irritated, other than I was exhausted. That's the only thing, lack of sleep is hard, but
it's real.
That's real. When you,
yeah.
That's
yeah.
The moment of, it's only been 45 minutes for four nights in a row, and you're crying because you're just shaking. Yeah. I collapsed a couple times. Just,
oh, sure.
Like,
yeah.
You pass out like that. What just happened? But infinite patience. And I would, and always encouraging, and just, it was very easy. And I would have to say, as a teenager, when you say this, I could see that I've gotten more masculine at times with about like the room or whatever, being more like a man. I'm conditioned to be very masculine because culture wants me to be very masculine. You know, we like that actually for women to be that way. I'm going to work on that. That's really good insight, because I know when I frustrate my son, we have this thing, and I'm confused, but I just flashed in many moments of like, oh my God, that's the mistake I made. I wasn't offering that gift of patience that I know I do actually have. And I was
we had a corporation come in and analyze, because SEALs end up being the guinea pigs for every initiative ever. Like Rand Corporation comes in and analyzes our leadership skills, you know, our organizational skills, and Company A comes in and analyzes what the impact is of Hell Week on testicular growth, whatever the fuck they do, you know. Yeah. So one of the studies was, it was a term of, how do you define wisdom, and are there any hormonal responses that we could draw blood from people that we think are wise, great leaders, and the ones that aren't, the ones that are not making great decisions over time, the lack of wisdom or experience. So one of the things that they found out, and I don't know, so this is just what I then thought, wow, that's an interesting finding, is oxytocin and dopamine are what they draw in high amounts from the people who are wise. They have a massive level of oxytocin, which I was like, oxytocin, isn't that a nursing freaking hormone? What the hell is that? And come to find out, mothers that are nursing have high levels of oxytocin and dopamine because there's immediate feedback. And oxytocin comes from hugging and proximity and touching. And what they found in the teams, these wise people would, I'm only going to reward you and get a dopamine fix when you do the thing that requires patience. So if I'm asking a junior guy to sit and be patient, the reward that I get is only when you do it after the guy shot at you 10 times. Don't shoot at him until he shoots at the 10th time. So, and the intimacy between a great leader and somebody that's following a great leader develops massive level of oxytocin between the two. And it's a weird environment in the teams. It's a very intimate physical environment, not the sexual side of it. That's 10% of physicality in the world. But the intimacy required to be wise and be patient has to be there. And we reward people with the wrong. If I'm patient and I reward them from not doing it, then I've screwed up the patient thing. Like, hey, junior, I'm not going to give you your allowance until you do A, B, and C. We give them the reward when they do A. And then they're not understanding the system. If I don't know if I'm saying that right. So if you, yeah. Another one is, patience is, I'm not going to hug my son until he does that and stops bitching about it. Don't complain about it anymore, junior. Don't cry. Not that emotions are bad, but I'm not going to reward you until you've met the thing that's on the paper. And then they go, wow, if I want mom's attention, I have to do A, B, and C. Or I could get attention from mom at A if I complain. If the mom rewards part of the system, you'll never acquire patience again. Do you know what I mean by that?
Yeah. No, I do.
And if I still have massive levels of oxytocin as I'm watching the person go through A, B, and C, because it's an intimate thing, even though I'm not doing it, I'm not picking up junior's clothes and I'm not, he's having to wake himself up at 6 o'clock in the morning. And then he's coming down and eating breakfast with us. Those are, say, the three things that I'm not going to reward junior with a hug or my intimacy until he does A, B, and C. If I do that, he'll complain. No, I'm not going to hug you or be this protective mechanism for you until you do something. When you do that as a parent, you actually produce a better human being over there. But that's I say that terribly. I've never tried to construct it that way, but oxytocin and dopamine are what happens when there's patience. But if you inject the reward early, they get the dopamine feedback.
Yeah.
And you get partial oxytocin because it's, I'll hug you, but I'm not fully involved in what you're doing. I wanted you to do more. So that weird thing that goes on inside of human beings is required that the mother ensure that all three things happen. And it's terrible. It's a terrible thing to watch mothers like, oh, Junior fell. Oh, come on. I'll hug you now. The kid's like, wow, I just got my dopamine fix. I didn't have to clean my room. Then moms are sitting in the corner going, well, you know, he'll figure it out. No, you've created a system where they can't figure it out now. They get you without having to figure it out.
That is really, that right there explains, you know, I've known this, but not in that context. I didn't know about that wisdom, oxytocin, dopamine piece. I know what those are, and I know how, what in terms of many contexts of what it does. But I didn't know about that. This is really interesting. I think that's like, I can see.
If I get something from you without earning it, I get a dopamine fix.
Right. And this is what parents are all doing now. I mean, they just
100%.
It's like instant. It's like nobody can let their kid. I'm telling you, some of my biggest pet peeves as a clinician, the use of digital technology, the distraction, people giving their babies Kindles and iPads and phones, and everywhere you go, a child is sitting there like this, addicted. They don't I can go on and on for hours about what that's doing to a brain and how you're damaging and destroying your child's brain. But it goes even deeper where it's this, that we're destroying patients. We're destroying the neurological capability of it. But it goes on, it's even deeper because there is so much of that. There's so much instant distraction, instant gratification, instant whatever, often just so the parents can go back and they can continue to be dissociated.
Do something stupid. Yeah. That was the weirdest study that I'd seen done in the teams is it was a parallel to another study of where serotonin shows up in the teams. But the funny findings was that while proximate of each other, like the more intense you are near somebody doing something somewhat similar together, the higher level of oxytocin that exists in the people that are doing something intense together.
Yeah.
If you separate somebody from the team, like you create an omega, somebody operating far away from the problem that the team is dealing with, within 5 minutes, their oxytocin level goes down. And I'm like, oh, I don't know what that means. At the time, I'm like, okay, cool. The issue with oxytocin, as the testers were saying, is it's the love hormone. It's the distinction that love, that the other person and you are the same and you're doing things similar and you actually function at a higher level. I don't know what it does to the brain, high levels of oxytocin, but the human being can function at a higher physical level under having more oxytocin in its system when it's functioning with another human being. Without it, you have two people that are going to be very disparate in their capability of doing something. And that I didn't mean to, your level of understanding is far surpasses mine.
I didn't know they really did this with the seals, honestly.
Oh yeah, we're the guinea pigs for everything. Yeah. Like they literally, it's the Hell Week environment that happens in training. No doctor or neuroscientist says that you should do it. Like if you were to go, since you have a problem with football, you would go and watch that from a medical standpoint going, they're dying. They're literally dying. Like your LFT levels are shit. Your kidneys are shutting down. If they took a brain scan, the brain ain't working right. Like on Thursday of Hell Week, and you've only had an hour and a half of sleep since Sunday, you do see visions very clear. There's a fucking pink elephant. Oh my God, what is that pink elephant doing? Oh my God, it just sprouted wings and it's flying. And if I say that to you in Hell Week, you're like, dude, there is a pink elephant. like the other person gets on board with your vision very quickly. Like, we're going to get over. Oh my God, it's good. Something's going to fall on us, and everybody takes cover and they're like, oh my God, it's going to fall. Like, dude. And the instructors are like, what the hell are these guys doing? And, we become the center for gravity of all what happens to the human body when, certain things are going on. And the funny part of it is the body always recovers.
Right.
No matter how bad you treat it, 7 days later, it's better than it was before. As long as something didn't break, it even breaks recover.
Yeah. That makes total sense that they would, you know, extrapolate this data from that. I mean, if you wouldn't, you'd be kind of stupid. I just really hadn't thought of it. And I appreciate you sharing it. It's really, really interesting. And it's giving me a lot of really interesting things to look at. I'm going to dive into some of the research around, just find it, because I think it's very useful for what I'm going for here. And I think parents can use some of that information for making better decisions on how they're actually taking care of themselves, how they're taking care of their children. And from a neurological standpoint, some things you were saying, you know, children, we're hardwired to look at our parents and model them.
100%. Because
the brain goes, well, to be successful, they were successful. They, you know, basically success is having babies. Biologically, you're like, DNA, make more. That's our main message. And it's like, okay, well, this is all unconscious. It's saying that's success. You know, they made me. And so for me to make more of me, I need to be like them. And obviously of deep concern is what children are seeing, because at least, you know, of the latest studies numbers, the estimate is 85, 86% of us are metabolically unhealthy in the United States.
100%.
Pre-diabetic, overweight, everybody's insulin. We've now come up with, you know, we're changing definitions on everything. And apparently healthy means you could be 400 pounds and a diabetic and have cancer, but you're perfectly healthy. And
but you identify yourself as a fat person. So it's okay then.
right. I identify as a thin person.
Yeah. Therefore, I'm an elephant now, so it's appropriate.
Yeah. And so I've caught, you know, a lot of us will catch flack. We'll get a lot of hate on social media for talking facts and data. You know, I'm like, well, I'm just going to give you some facts and examples on anatomy and physiology. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if any organ on your body becomes 5 times its normal size, we know that's pathological. The heart, the thyroid, the pancreas, the liver, this is unquestioned by anybody. Well, you know, adipose tissue is an endocrine organ. And I'm like, if it becomes 5 or 10 times the size that it's supposed to be, I'm not sure why we don't recognize that this is abnormal, because it's therefore giving off abnormal hormones and cytokines and signals, because it is an active organ giving off chemicals, signals, and talking to the brain and other parts of the body. So, but now we've made it be, you know, you can't say this. It makes me body shaming, I'm fat shaming for saying you should not be diabetic, for saying you should be strong physically. You are setting an example for your children. They are going to do what you do, not what you say, you know, and, you know, in an effort to make strong children become strong adults, you have to go back then to the parents, right?
I don't exist in the space that you do called, I don't really give a shit about what people say. So, shaming is the weirdest conversation to have about the raising of a kid. It's taking the low ground of any conversation is your interpretation of somebody else's opinion of you. That's what shaming is. My interpretation is that they're saying that I'm bad or good or wrong or something. Nobody gives a fuck about what anybody says anyway. The human condition doesn't really require somebody else's validation to do anything. Somehow we put that into the makeup where your opinion of me matters. It doesn't really matter to anybody, but now we put this new mathematical formula together called somebody's opinion of you actually affects you. It was never a part of the original code, if you want to say it that way. A third thing that women raising kids, boys should know is that you're supposed to fail. You're supposed to fail as a mom because tomorrow is a new day. Don't take what happened yesterday into the next day. Start over. So create strength, model strength, be patient, and start over every day that ends in Y. If you do that, it doesn't matter. Most things then fall apart as of importance. Start over. Most people don't start over. Somebody shames them and then they're that person forever. Or they think that person is a bad person because they had a bad day, said something derogatory. So they never start over enough, which is a fun phenomenon in the SEAL teams. It's actually the opposite saying, the only easy day was yesterday. So today is going to be hard.
Yeah.
Don't carry extra weight today. Don't carry shame with you. Don't carry all your failures into the next day. It's going to be hard today. It's going to get harder. Embrace that. And that's the negative way of saying tomorrow is a new day. The positive way of saying it is tomorrow is a new opportunity. Mm-hmm. And when you're raising people or developing awesome kids, you better not carry yesterday's discretions into tomorrow's new problems or new opportunities. Mothers are the only ones that have the capacity to do that because men carry shit with them forever. If you do something bad as a kid, hey, I remember junior where you couldn't throw a football. Dude, I'm a pro football quarterback. Yeah, but I remember when you couldn't throw. The mother's encouraging. Okay, tomorrow, let's go out and throw again. The dad is the one that recalls all the indiscretions of the kids. And the women have the opportunity not to provide that. But when a woman carries something with them forever, it's damaging. As a truth that I've seen. That's why I still say strong women make strong men. Strong men make strong women. Who raises the daughter? The man. A strong man will raise a beautiful, productive, healthy, strong daughter. A weak man will produce a weak woman. I would bet on that, all my bank account on that equation. You're a weak man, you'll have a weak daughter 100% of the time. Unless she leaves and rejects you wholesale. Starts over with something else, and which is an interesting predicament to be in. Yeah. Therefore, like you were saying, strong men matter.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And, you know, there's just an absence of, we got to deal with, there's an absence of fathers.
There right? is.
So there's a lot of us that didn't really have them around. Right. And so we figured out what we had to figure out in some kind of way and modeled and built, found our models and built ourselves and, you know, reflected who we needed. And, you know, who knows, maybe that's a big part of what sports did for me, because I had a lot of male coaches who kind of took me under their wing, many of them, and kind of, I was the pseudo adopted daughter. Some flat out said it, because let's say there were three coaches on a team. That was very common. I would be like a team captain usually. And two of the coaches, I remember, it's in my high school team, they had daughters on the team. So their fathers were coaches and they were national ranked players. They were on the US national team. I wasn't. So the head coach took tonight. He's like, well, you're mine. You good with that? Like, she's my daughter, you know? And it was like, okay. And it became, you know, like they would even, it was that obvious and it was good for me. Right. And they gave me some of that reflection of what I needed. You know,
most girls that are growing up have an opportunity to be supported by a strong male some point in time in their life.
Yeah.
Stacy has a beautiful story when in the business world where one of her first bosses took her under his wing and 100% let her fail. Try again, do this. This is the niche that you could possibly play in. and allowed for failure over time, which is what strong people do to when you're developing somebody, is you got to provide failure opportunities to people. And guarantee that's what that coach did. And that's what moms do to great kids, is to let failure happen, as opposed to, hey, Junior, don't jump off of that. Go ahead. It's going to hurt when you jump off, but go ahead. Try putting two more boxes up on the table. Jump off of that. Go ahead and skin your knee. All right. Is it bleeding? Let me blow on it. Okay. Go back out. That's what great moms do, as opposed to, hey, don't go outside. Don't go hurt yourself. And then they shelter their kids from failure. And then the real world will show you failure. If you don't learn it from your parents, you're pretty much stuffed.
Yeah. I think that's the greatest lesson that you really, that I see dealing with that. And I know it's coming from, I have so much compassion for these families that are really smothering their children, basically. Mm-hmm. And it's because people are so traumatized. These women, they're patients of mine, they're really living in so much unhealed trauma that they are not aware of. And so they're projecting it onto their kids, trying 100%. To protect them. They're thinking, this is how I can love and protect. And it turns, though, into a smothering. And it turns then into the child never having opportunity for failure, because they're trying to protect them from the hurt and damage that they're not recovered from at some point. And then their child has no resilience. And then they wonder why they have a panic disorder and they're self-mutilating or whatever, and then have to bring them to me for to balance their brain. And I'm like, well, we gotta back up. And what's going on with you? What's going on in this house? And how do we unhook this? And you know, because it's been modeled, and some of this, if that's so, parents who are listening, right? Like, that's this idea that you are a good parent for letting your child explore and test themselves and test their bodies and test the surroundings. And they have to fail, they have to fall, they have to, you know. I remember my son broke his arm. I said, it's the best thing for him. What did he learn? He felt, you're out, you're fine. Like, it's fine. Because look how strong your body is. Oh, it will.
The phenomenon of parents evaluating the success of being a parent on the immediate success of a kid is catastrophic. Mm-hmm. So if your kids fail, it's not, you're a failure. Right. Like, well, I don't want my kid to fail. I want him to get straight A's. Who cares? It may be so easy for the kid to get straight A's. They're not challenged. So just because your kids get straight A's doesn't mean you're a great parent. What means a great parent to me, by definition, is that you've been there during the down times with your kids. You let them have down times with you, as opposed to you shelter them from all the possible bad things that can happen. You shelter them from racism. You shelter them from difficulty. You don't let them go out in the, okay, Junior, it's cold. The snow is cold. Yeah, I want to wear shorts. Okay, go wear shorts. Dad, that shit stings. Okay, it stings. Learn from that. So that lesson of constantly allowing your kids to fall apart and not have it be you ontologically saying you're a bad parent, the more fucked up things your kids do while you're there, the better human being they'll be when they're out in the real world. And nobody wants to recognize that. Like, if you're going to fail here, son. Try as hard as you can, or be lazy. Oh, that's why your grade is an F, son, because you didn't do anything, as opposed to, he's so lazy, I want to help him out. I do all the work for him. He gets a B. Then he goes out in the real world and he goes, wow, where's dad? Or where's mom? I don't even know how to study. It's struggling.
Oh, Tom, you know, like, parents are literally filling out job applications and driving their kids like corporate. I'm stunned at times when people, I go, what? I don't.
Hey, dad, I missed this appointment. Okay. You missed it.
Right.
Well, I didn't get accepted. That's right. You didn't get accepted. What are you going to do now? I'm going to quit. No, you're going to start over. as opposed to hedging it by me doing everything for you. And then, wow, look how great you are and all this other stuff. And then left by themselves. So they're like, I don't even know how to fill in a check. I don't even know how to order a credit card. What happened? My dad, I lost my credit card. Figure it out, Junior. Figure it out. I'm not going to do it for you anymore. And that's the quality of greatness in a parent.
Yeah.
And it's rare.
Yeah.
You want your kids to be successful.
Yeah. Watching the struggle. And it's like, and here's the thing, but I think why a lot of people don't like that. You can't really brag about that on social media.
You know? That's true.
My kid this and number one that and signed up for this and oh, look, and putting on Pinterest and your special yep. whatever. I'm like, well, sometimes, like how many times?
Yeah, if I put up what other adults put up to brag on their kids, mine would be see my kid leaning up against the wall with his nose in a circle. That's what I did to my kid. You're abusing your kid. No, nope, I'm making him strong.
You. Yeah. You'd have, I'm like, well, you know, really interesting.
Paddles work. I don't care what anybody says. No, sorry.
No,
we're going to hell on that one.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's, you know, I'm all these voices have to be heard, and you've built yourself into, you know, people build themselves into remarkable human beings with what we would say is success, which is getting what you want and sometimes an extraordinary success doing things that are very rare and unique, like what your life has done. And we'll make sure we link in here at the bottom, you guys, the books and everything, and you can learn more about Tom and what he's done, as well as staying, you know, as well as marriage and raising children. We should listen, right? Like when I find somebody who's 98 years old and they're fit and doing well. I just had a new patient and 89 years old. This guy hasn't seen a doctor in 40 years mm-hmm. and is banging this. And it's like, you want to know, can you tell me what you're doing? Like, yep. Why wouldn't we? Like and even if what he says is disruptive to what you think it means to be,
time.
You need to listen, yep. You know, wow, that's, and you know, some of these people tell you, like, what, I have a shot of vodka every night. I eat steak and eggs. You know, you might go, oh, I thought that was bad. And you're like, well, like, let's listen. Let's listen. Please tell me, you know, so that's, I don't care what you say, because I want to hear the truth of, you know, what you have to say. I've kept you a while. I'm really good.
Did we ever get to a topic that was the podcast?
Oh yeah, I told you about okay. that podcast.
No, I'm totally kidding.
You've answered it well. Is there anything left? Any last, you know, key?
Maybe a 5-minute conversation of I totally believe in failure. I don't like to experience failure, but it's really the greatest place for human beings to exist, because we all screw things up. We all fail. If you recognize that you can fail to win, then the world is at your beck and call. You're supposed to fail. I was in 5 hell weeks to finally graduate on the 5th one. And failed out of West Point in English and was encouraged by a woman to write a book.
Yeah.
That's failure. That's not success. That's not, I went to Harvard, went to, you know, all that other stuff, and I never had anything but an A. That's different lifestyle. Those people who win all the time are the top 0.1%. Don't even try to compete with that, because it's not even competable. But the rest of us can fail often. As long as you don't give up, you can get back on the horse. I've had a divorce. I learned more from the divorce than I could possibly have imagined. Mm-hmm. So fail.
So let me ask, with failure though, right? Failure's tough. And how, Some people, they're avoiding it. I say I avoided
it. Avoid it. Whatever you avoid is going to happen anyway. It's you, right. It's a.
How do we teach some people? Like, how did you learn to? I'm going to get back up and do it again. Some people have said, they'll say, oh, I think it's just an inborn thing. And some people will say, no, you can be, anybody can be taught. Anybody can
learn. Everything is taught to human beings.
So what, if somebody is like listening going and they realize, oh, I'm avoiding failure. I always am avoiding it in my children because they don't know that. How can they learn? Or is there some, you know, what advice on that?
For somebody? The reason why failure is the greatest way to learn and grow is prefaced by the thing that's hardest to learn called there's no way out. So if you're going to do something, commit to doing it and screw your timeline. Mm-hmm. So if you want to be a mom, it's a lifelong commitment. Don't quit on it. And you're going to fail. Every day that ends in Y, you'll fuck up something, 100%. But don't give up on Tuesday. Okay, I can't do this anymore, so we give up. So in the SEAL teams, the conversation, and I had learned this, I thought, well, and then in the SEAL teams, they reinforce it. The only way out is death. You pick up a mission. You don't have to have the solution, but you're already always committed, already always committed. You're going to do the best you can until it solves itself or you die doing it. Most people can't fathom that. How long does it take to get a PhD? I don't know. Some people can get it in 8 years. How long does it take to get through school? I don't know. Maybe it takes somebody 20 years to get a high school diploma. Maybe it takes 40 years to get a high school diploma. Stop quitting. What's embarrassing? I'm 40 years old trying to study algebra. So keep doing it, keep doing it, keep doing it. And that's the definition of resilience too, is we get down on ourselves because we're not good at something. So we don't put any extra effort into it. My peers are now moved beyond me. So I'm not smart anymore. Or wow, Stephanie looks like she does that so well. It takes me 10 times longer than it takes Stephanie to do something. So I quit. Mm-hmm. Why would we do that? But there's nobody teaching that. They think, find your niche, find your passion. Good luck with that. You're never going to find a niche and you're never going to find a passion ever. So don't anticipate that. Commit to something that moves you the moment that you commit to it. And then stop not doing it. It may take a lifetime. You may never get there. You may never get there, but stop quitting. It's the worst thing that happens in our society. Everybody quits so often. They don't know how great they are. And everybody is phenomenally capable of doing great things, but they quit on Monday because it's hard. Well, you're damn right it's hard. Everything is hard. If it's easy, you probably wouldn't do it anyway. You'll stop doing it anyway because it was easy. I'll quit. Can you throw a 100-mile fastball? No, I'm 50. I'm good enough. 100-mile-an-hour fastball. Ready, set, go. I'm never going to get there. I can only throw a 90-mile-an-hour fastball. Keep trying. I had a neighbor in Coronado when we lived there. He was 92 years old, a virtuoso on the violin. And he would play Monday and Wednesday at 6 a.m. And I'm like, God, it's great music. So finally I had the balls enough to go knock on his door and said, hey, I just want to say, hey, thanks for the morning music. And he told me about his career, Boston. He was in an orchestra or a symphony there, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, hey, why do you work on the same song every Monday and Wednesday? He goes, because I haven't gotten it down yet. Mm. Oh my God. To me, it was butter. I'm like, it was the most beautiful music. There's still an imperfection in it. Like, oh my God. So here are these wise people still working on one thing for 90 years, 90 years. Oh my God.
Yeah.
That's what winning looks like. Most people don't qualify that as winning in my brain. That's how I would leave everybody with. You're not supposed to make it through the world but you're supposed to keep after something. And that's the greatest thing to do. Don't analyze yourself against anybody else. Be the best mom that you can be. And then Tuesday is another opportunity, and Tuesday another opportunity. Mm-hmm. But we quit so often. I don't even know what quitting does to your brain. I bet it's the worst condition that you could ever do is quit on something. Having not quit on anything, I don't have that inside my brain. I don't know why I said that. I was thinking about how the brain deals with quitting, what it does to the brain.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a great question. I bet somebody has looked at it. So I will go down the neuroscience rabbit hole there. And if they haven't, that'd be a very interesting thing to start studying. Yeah.
We quit on each other. We quit on ourselves. Just because you got a divorce doesn't mean you should quit.
Yeah.
Just because you failed at A, B, or C doesn't mean you should quit. Restructure it, try it again. Or maybe not go to school, be smart somewhere else. Excel somewhere else, but don't quit. But people quit so quickly. Dads quit very quickly on being a dad. Mm. Because they're not needed for 7 years.
Yeah.
Like, oh, now all of a sudden I'm needed. I've already moved on. I've already had a career, and now I have to give up my career. And dads quit. They're the easiest people in the world to get to quit on a family as a dad. And you see it in society. Mm-hmm. But, wow, that was a deep one. Thanks you for that. I'd never have an opportunity to say that.
Yeah. I mean, that, you know what? That may be another one, because just right there, I'm like, we could talk a whole nother hour on what you just said, especially that first 7 years. And I think it's important people understand that. And it's to have those blatant conversations. Like, I was having very blatant conversations, making sure my ex-husband understood this. Like, this is, you know, keeping involved, and it's nothing. It's not a negative against you. You have a role, but my role is this. And the way your role is not the same as mine. And it is going to change. Like, this is going to change at a certain point. There's going to be a shift of this. But for now, I will say, you know, in respect to him, he took on that role. I'm like, right now, you hunt and get food, basically. Like, I need you to protect, you get my food, you carry my bags. You know what I mean? That's what you're doing. You know, because right now, I am more important to him. And of course, you can hold him and do other things. And take a shower. But it was, and he got it. And without having his little feelings hurt and getting insecure and dot, dot, dot. I'm like, you hold what you're supposed to do now, because you will eventually, it is going to shift. And then it's, you know, and I do think there is, you know, if people could understand that sometimes and just say it and tell the truth of it, it would make, you know, couples a little bit.
The feelings issue is a destructive force in our society. How you feel about something. In the SEAL teams, there's that, nobody gives a shit how you feel, bro. Nobody cares if you're tired. Nobody cares if you're wounded. Nobody cares. We're solely focused on moving forward on this thing.
Yeah.
And it actually is a negative environment as well, but it allows you to compartmentalize how you feel about something relative to your commitment to it.
Yeah. I think a lot of parents could use a lot of SEAL training. You know what I mean?
That means there would be the same attrition rate in parenting of 11% success.
And I get it, because it's hard. I tell people, I'm like, man, this is no doubt the hardest thing I've ever done. It is definitely the most rewarding. It is a hard job.
I think being a parent, being a male parent is difficult later. Being a mom for 7 years is the most difficult job that you'll have on the planet. And our non-tribal lifestyle makes it 10 times harder.
Yeah.
I agree. But crazy.
Yeah. And you know, hopefully people, as we're talking about it more, I think women and families can start to take some pressure off themselves. I'm like, well, first of all, you're doing it in this isolated, unnatural environment. We are meant to be a little bit more tribal, and it's okay to start bringing other women, your family, your mothers, your sisters. Like, it's, you know, the way we're doing it is tough. And I tell them, like, it's, I can see it. So I was kind on myself around it. Like, oh, that this, it's an interesting dynamic. And so the self-criticism thing went out to some, to, you know, just going to, like you said, stay present with each day. It was a very, I think if you approach it the right way, your ability to stay present and learn in the moment and let go each day, I probably did it better then than I am doing now. So I do appreciate this conversation because it's making me reflect on those first 7 years and what I was doing so well and how I've forgotten some of it, actually, how I can actually leverage some of what I learned there and bring it kind of back on board. Cause it is, there's a shift, and it's an interesting thing as the child gets older and my son is becoming a man, he'll be 17 next month. Right. So it's like, oh wow, this is sounding old and he's big and we do different things now. We lift weights. We go to the gym all the time. That's like his new thing. That's like our thing. Yep. You know, which is, so as we talked about, I'm like, oh, no wonder that's what we do. Cause I was already always so physical with him. And now our closest.
It's place. A big deal for, it's literally weights. One of the most SEALs can reflect on a time when their parents did something demonstrably physical with them. They could call that image up very quickly. What do you remember most about your parents in a good way? We went to the gym together, or we went hunting together, or we first time I went on a run with my dad or mom. Hmm. Most people that have gone through hard times can recall doing something hard with their parents. And I know people that have never done anything difficult with their parents. And you look at their life and go, wow, no wonder where you're all stuck in this nebulous space that you have no reflections of a parent that did something tough with you. Mm. It's a big deal to do something hard with your kids. This is where they grow.
Yeah. Wow. That's really interesting. Because again, all these SEAL stories, I'm like, oh, that's what they say. It's really, really, really interesting.
And they got to find I think the SEAL environment is so unique. It's the last bastion of pure human being. Mm-hmm. You have to be feminine and masculine in that environment. You have to have both. It's not strict alpha masculinity. Trust me. It's what the movies show you, but it's not. You get to see your lowest lows, and you get to experience with other people who are hitting the real bottom neurologically and physically. And emotions are real in combat. They're very real. And I've never seen anybody go through a combat environment and not weep. And you don't ever see that in the movies.
Yeah.
So that environment endears itself to each other. That's why most people will stay in a very hectic place with other people going through it, because there's a level of intimacy and clarity that you never get anywhere else. Hmm. Things are very clear in combat with the boys that you've been training with. And the level of, maybe you'd appreciate this, the level of love and respect that you have for each other is not replaceable with even, I love Stacy and my kids, but I haven't had demonstrative experiences with them at the level that you have in the teams. Like the affection that you have for each other is, it's hard to even express. And then in that environment, I wish other people would have environments like that, like in businesses where you do hard things with people and then you survive it and then you're endeared to each other. Mm-hmm. Couples kind of quit on each other early instead of enduring through it and adapting and changing, and creates less in my mind, you know?
Yeah.
I'm not saying I'm perfect. I got a divorce too.
Yeah.
Cause I wasn't present, and it evolved and I did not.
Yeah. Yeah. Shocking.
Yeah. That's the deal. Everybody has that story.
That's really like, okay, we're going to have to do another one. Cause that I know this whole, what is human thing. we gotta, you know, we'll let the listeners, we'll, you know, we've been talking a while. And
if you survive Friday, we'll see what happens.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Well, wow. Yeah. I'm going out to work with Tom. We're going to do a little something and we're going to see. I'm going to come back 7 foot.
Full on abuse. We're going to abuse her until she, yeah.
Yeah. Are you going to keep me up for 36 hours? No.
Yes, 100%. Yeah. You're dead.
Yeah. I can do it. I've done it many times. But yeah. Well, wow. I can't wait to like re-listen to this one and kind of, but what we always do is we kind of go through and we pull out a splice of stuff like teasers, and you drop some things that just really, I don't know, take me. This was a pause conversation. Mm-hmm. There were things that you said at times that just went, I need to sit with that one. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't even know exactly what to say. So thank you. And, you know, I haven't read your book. And I get download, I've got a stack of giant, I mean, I read religiously a stack of things, but when we talked Monday and you said it was originally called Spartan Woman, and I'm like, what, mm-hmm. you know? And so just that alone did pique my interest in the stuff we were talking about. And your perspective today has been unlike any other man I've interviewed so far. So this is a really interesting episode for those of you who listen. So now talking to you, reading this, I can't wait to read it in terms of the context of knowing kind of where it's all coming from. And with that, it's like, it's, so we'll have his book and everything down in the description, you guys, and your website and everything and anything else okay. that, all that, but I'm super excited now with the context of this. Is it on Audible?
It is.
Oh, yep. Perfect. Okay.
A guy in Atlanta, the reader of Unbreakable is in Atlanta. He picked it up. Well, oh my God, he hit it perfectly.
Perfect.
He's a comedian in Atlanta, which is cool.
Oh,
he makes
awesome.
Some comical comments too. I'm like, wow, that was great tone that you took.
Oh man, then I'm going to bang this thing out. Cause as long as it's on Audible, as I've gotten older, I love reading, but the eyes,
deadly.
I'm like, I just can't anymore, you know? So thank goodness for Audible. Yeah. Perfect. All right, Tom, thank you so much.
Thanks, Stephanie.
This has been, it's been such a blessing. And I know for me and everybody who's going to listen, I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you all.
Bye.